Sessions podcast.
Two brown chicks changing the face in therapy, both sides of the couch.
On both sides of the couch. I'm Ebony Harris.
And I'm Melissa Volkin.
And we're both therapists in Houston, Texas, and co-founders of Melanin and Mental Health. Melanin and Mental Health is...
We are an organization that promotes mental health awareness in Black and Latinx communities. We do this with our website, our events, our online directory, our social media platforms. We're here to let everybody know that therapy is dope when you have a dope therapist.
Yes, and part of that is Between Sessions podcast, where we get to interview dope therapists.
Yeah, like...
Miss Danielle!
Yes!
If you guys don't know, Danielle is one of our brand ambassadors from event number one.
Yes, before we even
knew what we were doing.
Yes, before we knew there would be brand ambassadors.
Mm-hmm. Right. She was there and like, let me know what y'all need. I'm here. And so naturally when we were like, oh, we do need help, Danielle was first choice.
Yes.
So
she's our day one.
Huh? Yes.
Justin Smith. Justin, are you watching? You better be. Our day one.
Yes. Yes. So, Danielle, tell us a little bit about you and your practice.
Okay. So, like they said, my name is Danielle Bowman. I am a licensed professional counselor here in the, I guess you say technically Bel Air area, but in the Houston area altogether. I work with children ages 2 and up with trauma, that experience like disruptive behaviors. And helping those parents kind of understand what's, I guess you can say, going on with their kids. I also work with adolescents, teens, adults, and whatnot. But my zone focus is the little kids ages, like, between, like, 2 and 12, I guess you can say. Okay. Yeah.
You mean kids need therapy? Kids have problems?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you work in a lot of different capacities. You have private practice, but then you also go into the school.
Yeah, so I have in private practice, I actually have a group practice, D&K Counseling Group, PLLC, with Kiana Harris, yes.
She's there watching.
Business sis. So we have a group practice. I also do some contract work in the schools with Remind, which Remind was formerly a DBSA. Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, and so we go into the schools and have
support.
They changed the name like about in like last November or something like that. Okay. And so we go into the school and have those support groups in there. So I think I'm at 4 schools right now, 2 high schools and 2 middle schools.
Okay.
Wow. And then I also do the group in the young adult group in Clear
Lake. My goodness, you stay busy.
I thought I was busy.
Wow.
It sounds, you know, more busier than I guess it actually is.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Just don't do that much.
You right. I sleep.
A little bit. Yeah, I sleep.
So this session will be the last of our new mindset month, which is the whole month of January. Right. We talked about, you know, just reducing that stigma related to mental health, talking about why people don't go to therapy in different communities. And so today we're just going to chat about families.
Yeah.
And, you know, specifically children, because you know that's your specialty, but also just in general, like what's the struggle that families have with feeling like they need therapy. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with that just big overall question of why don't Black and Latinx families go to therapy?
Yeah.
Yes. What I see is there's a lot of mistrust and fear within the families of allowing that outside person within, like, their, you know, sacred space, their personal space, their privacy. You know, there's that fear due to, you know, historical things that have happened in both Black and Latinx families that, I said it right, Latinx.
Yeah. You said it good.
I do a little bit, but... And those families that just that outsider being able to like know what goes on in the family is that fear and that mistrust that occurs. And it's kind of like that feeling of like, well, you don't know me to help me.
Right.
Right.
So and then to have like business, I guess you can say out in the streets, which a lot of people think.
Right.
And don't truly not only understand what confidentiality is and also trust what confidentiality is. It's like you putting my business out in the street.
Right.
And so, no, I'm not doing it.
Right.
You know.
Right.
That's interesting because we did a project in like grad school at some point where it was looking at like, you know, different communities and the things that they have going on. And also your own family and what were some themes that you probably found within your family. And I know for my family, and I feel like a lot of minority families, is that secrets part. Like what happens in a house stays in a house, right? And it's not for everybody else to know. Right. And even within the family, there are certain things that you just don't talk about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I wonder how that impacts them making a decision to go talk to a professional about these things that are going on that aren't even really acknowledged sometimes within the family.
And a professional who may not be of the same cultural background, you know, the fear that you have even with that of just, you know, that's not how we do it in our families.
Right.
Like, that's, they do things differently.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it is that fear that if I go to someone that's not of this culture, it's like, are they really, truly going to get what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
I know a lot of clients tell me that, like, I specifically sought you out because you were black.
Right.
Because I went to a therapist before that was not.
Right.
And they didn't understand, like, the little things that I was saying.
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know, little sayings like, get at me.
Right. Like, no, true.
Doesn't mean anything aggressive. But it kind of sounds aggressive. If you're not used to
can
it.
Can be. Can I speak the way I normally talk with my family in sessions? And the person really gets what we're talking about.
Right. It's a comfort level.
Right.
And that's the, you know, that's one of the biggest things. That's like therapy 101, like comfort and engaging and whatnot, making sure your environment is welcome. But if you have that gap between, you know, cultures and understanding, there's not that comfort.
Right.
And then to actually bring your family in is like admitting that there's something wrong.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people don't want to admit that there's something wrong and we can just work through it. You know, especially with kids involved.
Well, I think also, you know, because I'm a parent, and so you also just kind of always have this mommy guilt, you know, or this parental guilt that you often feel like you're not doing things right. And so to have somebody be like, yeah, you really need help with your parenting because look what's going on with your child. Like, I think that's, you know, I don't know, maybe if you have found that it's that denial, because then that reflects on, am I not doing a good enough job?
Right, as a parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely some, like you said, mommy guilt, some parenting guilt, some that isolating feeling, thinking that no one else goes through this, it's just me. So, like, something's wrong with me, wrong with my kids, and I don't want that to get out.
Right.
You know,
right.
Judgment is big, and, it's that I don't, you know, I don't want to be judged.
What about the fear of losing your child?
Oh, yes. There is. I haven't experienced as much as before, maybe because, you know, mental health is starting to get out there.
Right.
People are starting to learn the difference between a therapist versus a CPS worker.
Yeah.
Or even worse, not just therapists, but social workers.
Right. When they hear social worker, that's what they think. Right.
Like, I'm about to get my kids taken away from me. And so there is that fear that if something comes out in sessions or with this professional, because we are mandated to call, they're going to take my kids. And so it's a lot of, like, education that goes into working with families, especially in minority communities. A lot of education. And, I mean, once the education, once you go over it and, you know, it's kind of like you're proving yourself to
Right.
So you're getting the trust.
Right.
To make that connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the understanding that, I think, going back to the cultural piece, that there are certain things that may happen that if I hear it versus if somebody that wasn't black or brown heard it, how do they perceive it? I mean, how do they see it? Perceive it, thank you. Mm-hmm. And not to say, like, we bypass abuse or anything like that, but there are sometimes when somebody says something, it's like, oh, okay, let's talk about that. It's not something where I feel like you're a threat to your child or anything like that, but that's something that we do have to discuss in therapy.
Yeah.
And you may not be so comfortable talking about those things if you don't feel like the person's going to understand.
The first thing that pops up in my head in that situation is spankings.
Mm-hmm.
Spankings and whoopings and, you know, people say I beat my kid.
But they didn't mean they beat their kid.
They beat their kid, but, like, if someone hears it, it's that ding, 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 ding.
Right.
Like, what did you do to your child? You were a danger to your child. And so that really, especially with disruptive behaviors and behavior issues, like, that really keeps parents from coming because it's like, I whoop my kids. With them admitting it. It takes them a minute to admit it, but, you know, I whoop my kids, I spank my kids. Mm. And it's almost that I said it, now what are you going to do about it?
Right.
You know,
and I think it's interesting because kind of, I know for me, like, growing up, that was like, you're going to get your
beat.
Whoop.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and, but I think, you know, I can't remember who I was having this conversation with, but just kind of the historical context of that mm-hmm. about it, you know, the fear that goes in when you have a black or brown child mm-hmm. and they act up, mm-hmm. you know,
that what that looks like outside.
What that looks right. outside. Right. And it's not just them being disruptive in a disrespectful way, but like there's a threat, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. when a child of color is having some sort of acting out that is not like, oh, you know, it's
yeah, you know, it's automatically deemed aggressive.
Right. It's seen completely different, and mm-hmm. that means the reactions of others are different, mm-hmm. and the way that the child is treated mm-hmm. would not be the same if it was a non-black or brown child.
Right. It's like deeming a non-black or brown child strong will versus the other, like a brown or black child, as aggressive
right.
or
disrespectful
mm-hmm. and whatnot. So it's kind of like those things.
Right.
Like mm-hmm. the positive versus the negative.
Right.
And so when a kid acts up, it's like, I need to stop this immediately.
Right, because you have a fear.
Right. My kid is going to be labeled as
right.
a menace to society.
Right, right,
exactly.
right. It's going to be
exactly.
a problem.
And yeah. that's a real fear that I think when you have, you know, a black or brown child, mm-hmm. how are they perceived by, especially males.
Yes.
You know, especially males. And I think that's part of, you know, historically kind of how that contributed to having these different ways of trying to correct their behavior.
Right. A lot of the, I guess you say, I don't want to say situations, but kind of like the mind states that go into what we're dealing with now have historical references.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure everyone knows that whether they want to acknowledge it or not.
Right.
Like a lot right. of the things, the issues that we deal with in every aspect, physically, psychologically, anything, reverts back to how we were treated in the past.
Absolutely.
Like the historical contrast of it, you know.
Right.
It's that notion, you know, we're told in society to forget it,
right.
but it's like we cannot forget that.
Right. Because it's in every aspect of what we do.
It's in everything.
It's yeah. in everything, and you know, more and more research is done about, you know, if it being in our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just a memory thing, but a body memory yeah. thing. You
implicit
know?
Memory.
Absolutely.
Like generational implicit memory.
Yeah,
that's
you know?
A thing.
Right,
you know?
Right. And so that's, you know, kind of like what we talk about. It's not about not talking about it, not forgetting, but how does that play a role
mm-hmm.
in how we're showing up today and how our clients show up in therapy.
Right.
Right.
I know, and I don't know other therapists do, but I know I talk about that a lot with my clients that are open to it.
That's awesome.
Like how like the things that happen in society are affecting them and how they present in therapy and like what they expected for me as a therapist.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because some of them they come out, they're like, I didn't expect you to have a fro like this.
And it's a very nice
fro. Thank you.
You know. Have a good day.
Yeah, you know the curls out. But and it's battling that that I guess you can say that stereotype of therapy that people have,
right.
like, you know, how is a therapist going to present themselves, what are they going to talk about, like mm-hmm. what is going to happen in this room,
right,
that, you know, when they actually get in the room and we're talking, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I can
do
this.
That's
right.
I can do this.
Therapy
so.
Is dope.
Yes. Absolutely. So
yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, so when we're talking about even families going to therapy, what would you say are some things that need, like they need, if this is happening, you might want to consider going to therapy.
Okay. I think a lot plays into people learning child development.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that
mm-hmm.
some people have like these expectations
yes.
of kids that they should have like these adult behaviors
mm-hmm.
because you know the adult acts like this, they should act like this
mm-hmm.
And whatnot, or they expect, like they have these high expectations
mm-hmm.
and kind of learning what child development is and where your child should be really helps out. But I would say if behaviors are, let me put it in words, I guess you say extremely inappropriate or causes harm to the child or to someone else.
Okay.
If behaviors are harmful, either you're not, either it's harmful in school, physically harmful, disrupts the home, like the function of the home, not just like one day, but just like more than one day.
Right.
Like the majority of the time, this is disruptive or this is harmful. You know, those are times where it's like, okay, maybe I need some help with this.
Yeah.
You know, and I try to explain to my parents that everyone needs help.
Right.
At some point. You know, therapists need therapists.
Right. Yes.
And so it's not just you, basically. You know, and it's that refreshing feeling that they have, a feeling of relief that they have when it's like, okay, it's not just me.
It's not a failure.
Right.
I need help.
Right. It's not a failure.
I love what you just said about it being harmful, you know, to add that as, because someone might see a child just being spontaneous, which is the nature of a child, as disruptive.
Right.
And it's like, okay, wait, so is it disruptive and harmful?
Right.
Is
it annoying you or is it?
Right. Because some people have a low tolerance to what they consider disruptive.
Right. So, like, and
why are you talking to me? I kind of
base that off of, like, my niece and nephew
because,
like, they, like, if they were in the room right now, probably. Right. My niece would be in the corner dancing.
Right.
To her own beat, just.
Right.
It's like, is that a problem?
Right.
Is that harmful?
Yeah.
She just has some.
She just got that energy.
Yeah.
Well, children are spontaneous.
Right.
And that's the nature of the child.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that you say that because I remember, you know, growing up, and it was kind of like, well, now that I think about it, like, some children are more mild-mannered than others. I think I was probably more mild-mannered, but I was also scared that I was going to get whooped, you know? Mm-hmm. And my parents would say, like, my kids didn't act like that, you know? And then I had my boys, and they're, like, got all this boy energy 2 years apart. And I'm like, well, they're not being bad. They're just being boys who are feeding off of one another.
Right.
Or not just being boys, but being toddlers.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They're
gonna
four.
Grab stuff.
Yeah. They want to wrestle. You know,
and
like
boys have that energy that make you say,
"Why? What? What is this?"
Like, I don't understand how that made sense, but I love your creativity.
Creativity, sometimes not.
Right.
Don't, because I think that's one thing to be real about with parenting is it's not, you don't love everything they do.
Right.
And it's not always cute.
And there's no, like, right way. There's no perfect parent. There's no perfect manual to raise your kids.
No matter what you think before having kids.
No matter what you think.
Right.
And, like, if you do, and if you are concerned about some of your kids' behaviors, you know, ask.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with asking. You know, there's nothing wrong with research. You know, I tell my parents all the time, if you're concerned about something, research it.
Right.
You know, or just call and ask, you know. There's school counselors, if you want to ask them. There's, you know, school officials and teachers and whatnot. Or if you want to contact a therapist, you know, there's that little phone conversation that most of us do.
Right.
Where you can kind of ask, like, I would like to come in.
Is this normal?
Is this normal, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the time we can't base it because we do need a little bit more information. But, you know, at least you made the effort in trying to ask.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with asking.
I have a quick impromptu question.
Okay.
Is that okay?
What
do you think about, have you seen, like, one of the latest headlines is Jay-Z saying that he believes, you know, counseling should be in all schools and to be part of reducing the stigma. How do you feel about that? Because there are some, you know, the therapist should be in all schools.
Therapist, which is different from school counselors sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
School counselors are there as a support, but it's usually there.
And they have other duties.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Like, they have complete other duties that take them away from trying to manage the mental health. And then they have, like, 300 and something students.
Right. Right.
So
it's only so much.
How do you expect them to manage that many students?
Yeah.
But I definitely agree with Jay-Z on that end, because one, like you said, it decreases the stigma of what mental health is.
Mm-hmm.
It's that education piece that's constantly going on in the schools. Like, this is what mental health is.
Mm-hmm.
This is what therapy does. It's okay to go to your therapist. If there were therapists in school, just saying, you know, I'm going to my therapist wouldn't be a negative thing.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
how
like,
cool would that have been to be in, like, school could go see your therapist. You know, kids would be using it to get out of class.
Right.
You benefited.
Right. Like, I'm about to go see my therapist. Pause.
Right. Walking out of class. Can I have a time out? I want to go see my therapist.
Yeah, I need a break.
You do hear that a lot. And he made a really good point, because you do hear a lot, like, it's a kid. What kind of problems do you have? And I'm like, I would not want to be a teenager again. Mm-mm. That ish is hard, you know, and the pressures and...
The hormonal levels changing, and your brain is not fully developed. They don't know that, but...
And what might be going on at home.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's a struggle to be... Yeah, I always think about that when parents are like, they don't have any responsibilities. Right. Like, I'm like, but there's so many pressures that come with being a teenager.
And you are powerless, essentially. When you're trying to tell those boundaries. Depending on how strict your parents are, you know, you may not have the ability. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as adults, just think of how we struggle. Mm-hmm. And we have supposedly have adult coping skills.
Right.
And then these children might be going through the same challenges you're going through, because you're going through it as a family.
Right.
And they don't have adult coping skills.
Right.
But you want them to act right.
Right.
you know?
And a lot of students internalize it. Like, in my groups, is... They have that space to just get it all out. And I'm like, oh, y'all deal with all this. Mm-hmm. Let's process this. And some parents don't realize how much they truly impact their children.
Even if you're not talking to them about the issues directly.
Right.
It still affects them.
It's nonverbal cues. There's verbal cues. They take it all internalized.
Mm-hmm. I really do think, though, too, like, again, speaking as a parent, sometimes you don't want to know. I can even say that. Like, even though I like to say I'm really involved with the kids, but there's, like, sometimes, like, oh, man, like, you scared to know everything.
Go talk to your therapist.
You know? or you don't want to hear, like, oh, it's a lot, I think, sometimes for parents to process as well.
Right.
And to think, like, what might be showing up in your kid is a reflection of what might be going on at home. And you're like, ooh.
Yeah, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to deal with, and that's why it's good to go see a counselor.
Right.
I wanted to, you earlier on somebody else.
We're talking about, right, that's why it's good to you were talking about the expectations of parents for their kids and not really understanding child development and things like that. One part of that I've noticed a lot when I don't work with kids, but I work a lot with parents, is my last child didn't act like that. You know, this is how we raised the kids before this child. Mm-hmm. Especially when I have grandparents that are raising, like, their grandchildren. Yes. Well, when I have my children, I did this. I don't understand why it's not working with this kid. And, like, the understanding that, one, generationally is completely different, but then two, they are completely different people. Mm-hmm. Even within the same family and siblings, you can't raise every child the exact same.
Right. That's something that's, like, I stay on repeat in sessions. Like, these two kids are completely different.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're gonna have to take a completely different approach to these kids, because they might be, I guess you could say, in the same family, same mom, same dad, whatever, but their DNA is different. The way they perceive the world is different because they are different. They're individual. Their brain development is different. You know, everything about them is different from this last kid. So you might have to switch it up a bit. And they might have learned that you did this with that kid. So let me try something different. Yes. You know,
or even if you think of the state of your relationship over a 5-year period, right?
Yes.
So your marriage and your family life might look like this for 1 year, but in two or 3 years, it's completely different. So this child is really being is growing up in a completely different environment.
Absolutely.
So understanding that.
And it is hard.
Right.
Again, from the parent point of view, it's like, just when you think you got it figured out, you know, like, oh, I got to figure it out now.
Yeah.
And it's like, damn, like, no, I don't.
Where did this come from?
So, and I think that's why it is so important to have the idea that you are that support system to the parent as well, you know, because just, again, reiterating, it's difficult. It is really difficult. And so that's why what you do is just so, it's just so dope. Because it is hard. There is no manual for that parenting.
I tell parents, like, okay, I know I'm seeing your child, but I would also like to see you too. So I'm gonna bring you in maybe 15 minutes. I think I have one family that they come in for like an hour before their kid comes in, but you know, I'm gonna come in, bring you in for 15 minutes, give you a rundown of what's going on, how's it impacting you. If you want to email me beforehand, and let me know what's going on, that's fine too. However you want to do it. But I do need to see you and talk to you in order to help your child, because they're living with you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
1 hour out of the week mm-hmm. with me doesn't compare to the umpteenth hours that they're with you.
Right.
And, you know, everything that happens at home impacts them.
Right.
And you might think they're, you know, perceiving it a certain way, mm-hmm. but you can't be for sure. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're taking your kid to therapy, the expectation... A lot of parents have the expectation that I'm taking my kids to therapy, drop them off for an hour, I go do what I got to do, come back and get them, right? And so what you're saying, and I feel the same way when I worked with teenagers, it was always in that first session, we did a group session with the parents and the teenager, mm-hmm. and it was very much a lot of conversations about this is a collaborative situation. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, the teen is my client, and I respect that, but I mm-hmm. also expect the parents to be involved. I also expect us to be able to have open conversations, mm-hmm. because I can't send the teen home with coping skills to deal with stuff, right. and the parent is like, no, they're not allowed to go walk away when they're frustrated. Right. You know? Right. Like, so we need and to all be on the same
real.
Page.
Yeah. Yeah. That's yeah. real. Like, yeah. a lot of teens, like, mm-hmm. they're not just going to walk away. And I have to tell my right. to tell my kids, like, you just can't walk away.
Right, don't just turn around and walk away. Yeah.
Like, that's disrespectful.
Right.
Let's role play this. But, you know, it's then involving that parent so that they know it's not just you fix my child. Like, no, it's not. One, it's not fixing.
Right.
It's improving upon. But it's also a group effort. Like, right. this is a team. Like, go
it's
team.
It's a whole system.
Yes.
Like, you have to learn the system. Because yeah. even when you just said that's disrespectful, like, what is respecting your family compared right. to what's respecting another family? So those are conversations that have to be had with the whole family.
Exactly.
So we can figure out how this works with your family and yes. not try to put other people's standards onto that family.
Yes.
What do you think are some, like if a family goes to a therapist that isn't brown or black, mm-hmm. what do you think are some struggles they may have had, or have you heard any stories of people that have had struggles with other therapists?
Oh, yes. That statement, oh, you do that? Yeah. So,
which is sounds just shaming. And
yes, it's a lot of shaming, or that I can't think of any exact examples right now just because my brain just
went blank. Yeah.
But it's that assumption that, you know, they're supposed to do this,
right.
or you're not supposed to spank, or you're not supposed to speak to your child mm. yelling, you know, mm. or. This is what you're supposed to do versus this
right.
is what you are doing.
Right.
So it's that disconnect of mm-hmm. feeling like they don't get it.
Right.
Like they're just, you know, saying what mm-hmm. they're saying, but they're not understanding how we do family.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't a lot of even respect, or like I know Lisa always talks about honoring mm-hmm. what we have going on.
Yeah, or understanding.
Right. Right.
Just understanding the fact that people do it differently.
Being curious.
Yeah.
About how
being curious.
Good questions
and,
here too.
Yeah.
You want to go to a few of them?
Yeah, let's okay. do it. Let's do a couple of these.
I saw someone say something about church.
So
how can as a therapist incorporate cultural practices, i.e. prayer, natural medicine, or practices and with regarding religious practices? So I guess if a family is religious, how do you incorporate that within the practice?
I feel like if you're religious and your family is open to it, then there's nothing wrong with doing a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
If your family is open to it, like I have some families that, you know, they talk about going to church, they talk about praying, and when something happens, you know, I don't mind saying, okay, I'm going to pray for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, or some families are like, can we do a little prayer right quick? Sure.
Yeah.
Hit
me with it.
Right.
Let's
right.
go.
Letting your therapist
yeah.
know what are some of the strengths that, or the coping skills you already have,
mm-hmm.
right. and incorporate that.
How yes. have y'all tried? What have y'all worked on in the past? What mm-hmm. have you done in the past that has helped this, or that you wanted to help, or whatever?
Right.
And then figuring out how to incorporate that into the therapeutic mm-hmm. process.
Right. Yeah. And some clients are really open to, you know, kind of talking about their religion,
mm.
how they incorporate that in their lives, because that's important in their treatment.
Mm. Right.
So if, you know, they have incorporated, you know, religious practices in the way they kind of function,
mm-hmm.
and that therapist is open to incorporating it into their practices, maybe, you know, prayer or however you all kind of decide
right.
on how to incorporate, then there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
I know in therapy one-on-one, they say stay away from religion, you know, all together and whatnot, but if you're
that's
you're open to it,
right.
and if it's a part of you, if it's authentically you,
right.
then there's nothing wrong with it.
And if the client is saying, I need this as part of my mm-hmm. of my process,
right.
you know,
right.
Mm-hmm. And it's within your scope.
This is...
Yes.
Here's another good one. So how about the reactions of parents not matching the child's, quote, bad behavior? Mm-hmm. The idea that children of color don't act out this way in public versus non-children of color, mm-hmm. that children are seen, are to be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. Kind of what we were talking about with the expectations. Mm-hmm. Or why we might have a certain level of anxiety about children of color acting out in public.
Because how they're going to be perceived. It's not going to be, oh, they're having a difficult time with understanding why they can't have candy.
Right.
Oh, this kid is bad. Yes. He's going to be a menace. He's going to be, you know, all these negative things. But, you know, that child is just like any other child. They have difficulty with accepting no for that time.
Right.
You know? Right. But it's those extra pressures of being colored in America, a colored person in America, that kind of feeds into, like, no,
you just don't have a lot of room to
I think that's a big part, even the being seen and not heard. I was watching some movie and a little kid was like, well, I hear everything because people don't really acknowledge the kid's presence because the adults are talking, you just hang out, and then kids end up hearing so much more than they're probably supposed to when they are seen and not heard, you know, because you continue to have these conversations in front of them, and then you're surprised that they know what's going on within the family.
Right.
Or the idea that they don't know what's going on.
Right.
Like, no, they're too young
to remember. And, like, that's something that's a constant battle with parents. Like, oh, that happens when they were one. They don't remember that. And so, like, explaining that they don't remember consciously, but their body remembers.
Exactly.
Implicit, you know, then it goes to implicit memories, explicit memories.
Trauma.
And they're like, oh, my goodness, all that goes on. I'm like, all that goes on. But it's, and I always say, like, you didn't know.
Right.
So, but you know now, so let's work on it now.
Right.
Right. So, because there's that parental shame then that kicks in, and you're like, oh, my goodness. You know, I think a lot of times they're like, how am I messing up my kids? You know, like, what are they going to need to go to therapy for? You know, so I love that you are educating the parents on, hey, you know, there's still a way to correct all of this. It's not too late to be able to do something.
No, it's never too late.
It's never too late.
Yeah. And especially once you acknowledge, like, it's not I was a bad parent. It was I wasn't aware. I didn't know. And even when working with adults, it's always like, can you give your parent the benefit of the doubt that they did the best they could?
Right.
It may not have been what was best for you at that time, but they did the best that they could with the tools that they had.
Right.
And so they might not have understood it. And so a lot of times with adults, it's about forgiving the parent for not being good enough or whatever the case may be, and accepting that they had your best interest at heart.
Right.
Even if it didn't feel that way at the time.
Right. They did the best they can with the tools that they had.
With the tools that they had.
And so.
Right. And they might have different tools now.
Yeah. Building up your toolbox. That's like an overused expression.
But right.
It works.
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
And I think it is important, though, to also acknowledge what is not being, what needs are not being met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to shame someone, but just to understand children also have these needs in addition to having, you know, the basic needs, food, shelter, clothing. They have emotional needs.
Yes.
They really do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to start to talk about just therapy in general and why do you think therapy is dope?
I love her shirt.
But you can get people, I'll tell them later.
Yeah.
Later.
Therapy is dope because it gives you that space to allow yourself to repair the brokenness that has happened, whether it's whatever has happened that has caused some kind of pain or some kind of broken feeling or some kind of hurt. It gives you that sacred space to allow yourself to go to the areas that you didn't think you could take yourself and then return back as a new person.
That is good. That touched me. I went there and I came back with you.
It's a journey. It's a journey. You know, I tell people all the time, it's not going to just happen overnight.
That's right.
Like, this is a journey, and I'm just your guide in this journey. Like, I'm not going to make the decisions for you.
That's right.
But I'm just going to help you guide to the decisions that are best for you.
Right. I think that's important for you to reiterate that parents, when they go see Danielle, she's not going to tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm just going to guide you to the decisions that are best for you. Because what's best for one family might not be best for another family. Like, there's no one size fit all to, you know, solve all the problems. So it's kind of a guidance. Like, let's work this out.
Right. And the therapist isn't there to replace the parent.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times they'll say, like, I'm going to tell your therapist or whatever. And it's like...
And I'm sitting here like, what am I going to do?
Right, so what did you do about this parent?
You know? Right, and I would literally say, okay, what am I going to do? And they're like, you're going to help me solve this. I'm like, I'm going to help you solve this. Like, I'm going to support you. Mm-hmm. But
I'm not disciplining your child. I'm not, you know, yes, no, that's not my role. My role,
there's some things
you.
I will step in on, but then I'm going to say, hey, this is what you can do in this situation.
Right.
Let's talk about this. What just happened?
Right.
That I had to kind of. Finesse.
Like, right. What was this?
Right.
Finessing therapist.
Yes.
Yes. The question?
Oh, no, no. The question, no.
Okay. So what makes you a dope therapist? What are you doing to change the mental health game?
I think what makes me a dope therapist is the authenticity. Like, I'm not just, like, patting myself on the back, but, like, other people other people have said, like, it's very, you know, you come off very genuine, come off very welcoming. So I think, like, that is kind of what makes that therapist dope. Mm-hmm. You know, being myself, being whoever, that authenticity that you have, that realness about you.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, allowing your client to know that in some ways you are flawed, you
right.
know, because
right.
that makes that connection real.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not perfect.
Right.
You know?
Close.
I give you that. I got a little razzle-dazzle.
So, how can they find you if people want to find you? How can they book a session with you? How can they find you on social media?
Our website is www.dkcounselinghouston.com. Facebook is D and, like, the actual word, and K Counseling Houston. And Instagram is DK Counseling Houston. And then Twitter is DK Counseling HOU. Like, they wouldn't let me be great if I did all of it.
Twitter is a hater.
Twitter is an absolute hater. In the username game. And then with Facebook, it was like, okay, the whole ordeal with Facebook was that we had a page, and then I was like, you know what? I don't like how this is set up, so I'm going to make another page from this page.
But you
thank you, Kiana,
it.
For just letting me do me. and but then in making the username for Facebook, like, this page was still active, and I was like...
See, therapists have problems, too. But if someone wanted to... So if someone is watching this or listening to this, and can you give them some possible reasons why... they want to book a session with you, why they would want to book a session with a therapist that specializes in child behavior? What would be some
you want to book a therapist that specializes in child behaviors? One, because I'm open to the kids, you know. It's kind of like about that relational things. Kids are very honest. They can pick up on when you're BSing, when you're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to get somebody that's going to be authentic and honest and whatnot in what they're doing. And I feel like I have both of those.
And what would be some of the behaviors they'd see in their children that you know, might possibly bring them in? Like, it doesn't have to be like the school is telling you to bring them, or it's not being mandated by somebody. What would be some common reasons to bring them?
So most parents know their kids. You know, they know the level of energy they would have. They know the level of language they would have.
Mm-hmm.
If you see things that's outside the norm for your child, then that might be a time where you need to bring your child in.
Okay.
I hate it when parents like compare themselves or compare their kids to other kids because it's completely different kid
right.
by kid. But you know your child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you notice in the difference within your child or if your child is telling you,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a reason why your child is saying that they feel sad or they have anger
right.
or they just don't feel right. Something doesn't feel right.
Right.
And they might not be able to fully express it, but they just don't feel right.
Right.
So, you know, if your child is telling you, then that's, number one, your child is having a problem.
Right,
them
right.
In. But then if you notice differences, you know, unexplainable differences within your child, then it might be time to
Or even the whole talk about body safety, you know, if you notice them acting a certain way around certain people.
Right.
Some
the nonverbal cues, like if, I don't know, Aunt Margie come in and it's like an instant stiff. Mm-hmm. When Aunt Margie come in, what is that? Mm-hmm. Like, what is your child's body language right. telling you about Aunt Margie?
Right. Like,
or, if, I don't know, Uncle Phil.
Right. Uncle Phil.
It just popped
in. I wanted to ask, and I, this is kind of off topic, but I know we had the conversation about insurance and you take insurance. Mm-hmm. What made you choose to go ahead and take insurance? Has it been a bit, as big of a struggle as a lot of therapists think it is? Would you recommend that therapists take insurance? Or what do you think about that whole conversation?
I take insurance because I came into the game wanting to work with low-income families. Mm-hmm. So that was like when I think even when I was going through like grad school, I was like, I want to work with low-income families. I feel like, and this is no secret, that low-income families get very bad services right. most of the time, right. whether it's insurance purposes or, you know, simply financial reasons, they get lesser quality services. So I was like, if I get in the game, when I get in the game, I know I'm not going to be subpar.
Right.
So I know that I can provide services to this population that usually a lot of times get subpar yes. services. Right. So that's, I came into saying mm-hmm. that I wanted to work with low-income families. Okay. Mm-hmm. In order to work with low-income families, I have to take Medicaid. And if you take Medicaid, you might as well take everything else.
Yeah.
Right. That's yeah. just how it was. Yeah. I don't think I looked at rates or anything like that. I was just like, I know this is the population I want to work with.
Right.
So I know I got to get Medicaid.
Right.
And the way Medicaid is set up in Texas, like if you take traditional Medicaid, you have to get on the other Medicaid.
Yeah. I took traditional for a while and they would come in and see me. I'll be sitting for like 3 to 4 sessions and it's like, oh no, this doesn't cover because now they're under mm-hmm. the whatever panel.
And Medicaid, that's a whole other education in and of itself mm-hmm. because they don't. Insurances don't explain to the parents what's going on with the Medicaid.
Right.
So it's kind of like if you have traditional Medicaid, after a certain time, if you don't pick something, they will pick something for you. Mm. And so a lot of times they don't know that they have Texas Children's Medicaid mm. or they don't know that they have Amerigroup.
Right.
It's kind of like brand new news to them to say, oh, I have Amerigroup?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you have Amerigroup. It's a Medicaid yeah. plan, and they probably just stuck you on there.
Which right. is frustrating for the parents as well, because clearly if they're coming to see you, there's some sort of distress already going mm-hmm. on. And on top of that, I got to worry about this and that. So
right.
I think that's so wonderful that you came into the game already with the mentality of the type of service that you were going to provide,
right.
what you were going to do. That's if we could only get more and more opportunities and options like that mm-hmm. across the board.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for
yeah,
being
this
on the show.
Yeah, this was so good. I learned a lot, too, myself.
Like, yeah.
I'm going to have to remind myself that when my kids are acting up, are they being harmful right now?
Or is it just annoying to you?
Yeah, right, right.
Because then I'm going to have to walk away.
Yeah, is it just annoying to you? Then you have to look at, like, why is this annoying to me?
Yeah.
Right. When they're just being authentically themselves over there.
Why does that
and
bother?
I'm over here. Why is that bothering me?
I'll be like, I'm gonna send them to Auntie Danielle.
And I'll be like, you know what, do you boo over there
in your little space.
Right. Because I promise, and I learn a lot from like my niece and nephews because like they are
so cute
authentically themselves and like they just bust out in these movements and like they are just them and I'm like, you gotta respect that.
Right.
It's an innocence about kids that make you want to be more real and more authentic yourself.
But have you seen an authentic 16-year-old? They're not that cute.
And then you have to keep reminding yourself, okay, hormones.
Yeah. Right.
The brain is grown
yes. up, fully developed. Yes. Right.
I have to be understanding to this. Let me calm myself.
Yes. Right.
Before talking. And then if you find yourself getting frustrated, just step back. Like, you know what?
Yes.
Never mind. Yes. I'll come back.
Let me go call Danielle. All right. Well,
go ahead.
Wrapping it up.
Yeah. You can follow us across social media at Melanin and Mental Health, as well as Melanin Health on Twitter, because like
yes.
we said, they're haters.
Just
FYI, this is not a Melanin and Mental Health shirt. I'm wearing this shirt because tomorrow is the first day of Black History Month, and I'm a part of a nonprofit that works to get Black History black books by black authors in schools. Just in February, there's a program at a school here in Houston. Every year it's a different school, where they have up to 100 black professionals come in and read to the kids and tell the kids about their profession. It's called Buddy's Books and Brunch. So if you want to support, you can go to buddiesbooksandbrunch.org. If you're in Houston, sign up to volunteer. The shirt, I think, is a little different this year. But it's my favorite. So I just want to shout out that organization. It's a really cool organization.
Yes.
So, and donate if you can. It'll be great.
And melaninmentalhealth.com, where you can go online and you can, the merchandise, that's where you're going to find it, because we've had a few people ask about where you can get the shirts.
And check it out tomorrow, February 1st. Well, it's probably going to be like in a couple hours. But February 1st, we are doing a little revamp, and we have a campaign. So we're just going to mention that really quickly. If you are a therapist in private practice or working with an agency or anything like that, we are changing up the website.
Yes.
And
we have somebody asking about that right now.
Oh, did you?
Okay. How do I pronounce your name?
Melanin and Mental Health.
No, I was reading.
Oh, I was like.
They're asking, they're saying, Melanin. A lot of folks are discussing this issue, but where are the initiatives dedicated to really addressing acculturating therapy for Black and Latinx people? Know of any? Hey, that's us.
Yeah. And we actually had this discussion last week. Go ahead.
Is there a directory of Black/Latinx culturally competent, which is not automatic. That's right.
We
had that discussion. Therapist. And yes, that's exactly what Melanin Mental Health is here to do. You can say a little bit.
Yeah, so we're working on we have a directory already, but we're working on making this like the biggest hub for minorities when they're looking for information about mental health. And so we're doing blogs, and if you want to write a blog for the website, let us know. Go to the website and send us an email at info@melaninmentalhealth.com, because we really want this to be a resource. If you think of the mental health resource, it's Psychology Today.
Mm-hmm.
But very few things are directed at brown and black communities. Mm-hmm. It's very general. And so we want to be a hub where there's so much information there that this is the first place you go when you're looking for something related to mental health. Even if you're not ready to look for a therapist, there are resources, there are blogs, there are videos, there's information for you to learn more about these different type of therapies, what to expect, the child development, all of that, all in one space. And so that's what Melanin and Mental Health is about. And like I said, we are about to switch over the directory. Mm-hmm. Right now we have the directory, but we're about to switch it over probably in like 2 or 3 hours. and you can sign up, and it's 3 months free. And with the new directory, you don't have to put in a credit card. We just want to find like 100 therapists for the month of February, especially Black History Month. We want to get 100 therapists on the site so that as these people, because we get emails regularly,
NYC, please come through.
Been having quite a few people ask
looking
about New York.
For you all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is our goal. So please share this video. We'll be posting more about it throughout the month of February, of course, to try to get these numbers up and really have a place for everybody to go to find a dope therapist, find a therapist that is culturally competent and knows how to work with our
communities. That's right. So we can keep changing the face of therapy.
On both sides of the couch.
That's right.
Yes. All right. Thank you
so
guys
much for
listening.
Everybody.
Follow us on SoundCloud, iTunes this week. I said that last week, but the sound was a little off. But SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all that stuff. Make sure you follow us and share the podcast with everybody.
Let everybody know.
Yep.
Yay!
Bye!